Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. 24 hours till the NBA draft. We will have Amin El-Hassan from ESPN. He has been on set all morning on SportsCenter breaking it down. We'll talk with him, ESPN front office insider, a former Suns assistant director of basketball ops. What does he see in Eric Bledsoe to the Knicks, fact or fiction? Also, the way it's going to lay out with Minnesota, the Lakers, and Philadelphia 1, 2, and 3. We have to have a little bit of fun around this draft, too. This is not brain surgery. So when I saw that Justice Winslow from Duke, who's going to go somewhere in the top 15 to 20, actually went to visit GQ to make sure that his suit was right. And then, of course, he went and visited a professional makeup artist. Absolutely. This is what we're all about on draft night. So at some point in the show today, we found all these ugly, hideous, wretched suits, guys, that we're going to bring out from the past and show you what tomorrow night will be like. It's like a fashion show, the five ugly NBA suits. Mark Cuban said something really interesting about a NBA club team for 11-year-olds. I want to get into that a little bit later on. Of course, my guy is 10. He's going to be 11 in October. He's going to be bigger than me. I'm 6'8". He's going to be bigger than me. This is of interest to me. Mark Cuban saying it should start from the bottom up instead of the top down with the club scenes. We'll get into that. Pedro Gomez will join us, ESPN baseball insider. He comes on every week. We'll talk with Pedro about the Diamondbacks salary dump of Bronson Arroyo and prize prospect Touki Toussaint. We'll get into that. Should they be buyers or sellers floating around 500? Cole Hamels looking at Texas, or is it Texas looking at him? The surprising Houston Astros with A.J. Hinch. You remember A.J. here in Arizona. What a disaster. What a train wreck that was. So we'll talk with Pedro on that front, some other things as well. Let's get you caught up some things on my mind in the world of sports, brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it's all about you. Guys, I have no script here in front of me. I'm not going to sit here and read bullet points, as we say in the business. I'll just tell you my Santan Ford experience. Yesterday afternoon, I went home, picked up my 10-year-old, his broken wrist, needed to go to the doctor. It's a 40-mile commute from my house to here at the studio. I'm not whining about it, but I have the hybrid. I have the Fusion hybrid. I'm getting 53 miles per gallon in the Fusion hybrid. I fit in it. I had business meetings, picked up my son, ran errands. Makes a lot of sense for me. My gas gauge barely moved. Read my lips, 53 miles. That's getting it done. When you're on your summer vacation, do you have that vehicle that you trust, whether it's a car or truck? The Santan Ford experience with General Manager Tim Hovick and company, they're the ones that can hook you up and treat you right. Tim's a big sports supporter with the Diamondbacks, with Arizona State, and of course with the Cardinals. Santan Ford just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. I think the story of the day in Arizona, we'll start here locally and then we'll get into the national stuff. And I'll keep the Diamondbacks short. We have Pedro here in about 10 minutes. So I'm watching last night. Chase Anderson, somebody sent me a text during the game. They should rename Coors Field Chase Field because Chase Anderson got rocked last night. He got crushed last night. Nolan Arredondo just hammered away on Arizona.
High and deep left center field. He may have got another one. Take a good look. You won't see it for long. Front 7-4.
All right, so Chase Anderson, who's been pretty good, okay, I'm not going to sit here and crush him today. 8 runs on 8 hits in just 4 2/3 innings. Here's Diamondback manager Chip Hale afterwards.
He just elevated the ball too much, and they had good at-bats against him. They didn't seem to take, I don't remember, one swing at a ball out of the zone. So we'll have to check and see if he was tipping in any way. Because they seemed like they knew it was coming.
How about that? A little hint there. Tipping of pitches. Now, Alan Webster goes tonight. Again, a who? What? Alan Webster? Third career start. Welcome to Coors Field where it's batting practice. I don't feel good about this tonight. The Suns. So this Eric Bledsoe and the number 13 pick to move up to get the fourth pick from the Knicks. Sounds great. Sounds great to talk about here on the show. I would love to see this happen because I look at the Suns roster and say, what a train wreck. The organization has been an absolute disaster. But I do believe in Ryan McDonough now that some of the dead weight that's been above him has been moved on. Here is McDonough on the 13th pick and the Suns looking at tomorrow night.
I feel good about where we are. We're going to have good options. I think the phone will start ringing for teams trying to get our pick. So usually those conversations aren't very productive 2 weeks before the draft, but on draft night or closer to the draft, they get a little more serious, a little more intense.
Okay, here's a little bit on the national side on this draft. So Minnesota's going to take Karl Anthony Towns. I think Karl Anthony Towns is, first of all, it's a tremendous story. Karl Anthony Towns' dad made him play different positions on the floor. You know, when you go out and you watch your fourth grader, fifth grader, I'm in that scene right now, my fourth of four kids, where they want him to play in the middle all the time because he's the biggest kid out there by a long ways. And I actually appreciate their coach saying, no, we want him to play out on the wing. It's not going to be pretty. He's going to dribble the ball off his foot. He's going to have it stolen by a runt. That's going to happen. But when he gets older, and that's what Karl Anthony Towns' dad did for him. They held him back in the seventh grade, usually sixth, seventh, and eighth graders. I've seen this through the years in sports. Dads want to hold them back so they're more mature. Their bodies have grown into it. The dad says, well, it was all about academics. I don't know. The kid was 6'9 when he was in eighth grade. Now here he is. Towns is going to be the number one pick for Minnesota. His development has been terrific. He can do a lot of things on the floor. The Lakers at number two, D'Angelo Russell. So when we took the show up with U of A into March Madness up to Portland, and Ohio State played U of A, I won't forget the D'Angelo Russell quote as I'm sitting there hearing him talk about why he chose the number zero. Eric, do you know why D'Angelo Russell chose the number zero when he was at...
I do not. And is zero a number? Have we
established zero
a
number? I don't know. I've had guys say it is, it isn't.
Regardless. Get on with the story.
I mean, bang me over the head. It's fine. I'm not a numbers expert. I'm simply here to talk sports. Don't cut hairs on me. I don't have much to cut. So D'Angelo Russell, Eric, wore zero, chose zero at Ohio State because he said, quote, that's the number of people that can guard me. Of course it is. What a great quote that is. I want that guy on my team. Let's be overly uber confident. I'm sure Magic Johnson, if Russell is taken by the Lakers, I'm sure Magic will go crazy with this kid. Just love this kid. Kobe would love this kid.
There are so many things about that quote that I love and so many things about that quote that I hate.
Sure.
All wrapped up in one.
Sure.
Because when he gets to the NBA, and if that feeds into an opposing team's locker room, you can bet that there might be a little extra motivation.
Is he going to wear zero?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Who are the grade zeros? Oldham Polonese was not a grade zero. Robert Parrish was a grade zero.
He was double zero.
Double zero, in fact. Yeah, you're right. Were there other zeros? I'm trying to think on this. But D'Angelo Russell wore zero because it's the number of people who could guard me. Of course it is. And then you have Philly with Jahlil Okafor. Okafor, to me, is the safest pick in the draft. I've talked to Jerry Colangelo about the Duke players. Jerry, of course, here with the USA basketball team. And seeing Coach K develop Okafor, there's the Duke haters out there. Duke haters are everywhere. So you look at Okafor and you see a project. In Philadelphia's case, if they draft him, he'll probably blow his knee immediately because it's Philadelphia. They always screw this thing up. The draft, if you're going to draft a player from Europe, I'm just going to tell you, buyer beware, unless you're the San Antonio Spurs. Anybody who's seen through the years these guys that come from overseas that have all the hype, give me the last great guy, especially here in Phoenix, but across the country, the last great guy that comes from overseas that's going to kill it, that's going to tear the league apart. And I would say to you, more often than not, they miss. Go look for yourselves. So we'll get into that as the show moves along today. I love this story. So we're going to switch over to college football. And we're very college football centric here. So when I saw this morning that BYU Media Day was trending.
What?
I had to look and see, why is BYU Media Day trending? Today, BYU football is holding their media day. Media days are things that you do to generate interest and excitement in your program. You make the players available. Everybody gets up for it. We take our show every year to Pac-12 Media Day. I want to take our show to Big 12 Media Day. I want to take our show to SEC Media Day, Big 10 Media Day. I didn't have any idea to start looking around for BYU Media Day.
No, this is great news because that means college football must start in like 3 or 4 weeks.
Of course, they're already
having media days, right?
Their first game's not till September 3rd against U of A.
Oh.
It's June 24th. hey, we're going to be really good in 3 months. I will tell you that the news that came out of it today, we have a lot of BYU fans here in Arizona. We just do. It's heavy LDS, heavy Mormon population. It's fine. And I'm not poking fun at your program. It's just out of the blue today. I have a media day going on. BYU, Eric, has taken an independent schedule. They're scheduling independent, and they had a Toledo today, and they're all excited about having a game against Toledo. They go east of Texas for 4 games this year, BYU does. But they're saying because that they are on ESPN so much, it is worth going to West Virginia. It is worth going to several of these schools.
They play Nebraska, I believe, as well.
They play Nebraska. No, that's right. And so that's of interest to me. They open again with U of A here in the state.
And BYU has been known to be giant killers as of recent. I mean, they went to Texas and housed Texas a couple times.
That was the end of Mack Brown. I remember that game. Texas went to BYU and it was like 60-0.
Not like beating Texas now is the equivalent of beating Texas during the Vince Young time, but still a good win.
And then ASU's freshman George Lee gets arrested yesterday. And I bring this up because he had been moving up the charts. I've had a number of U of A fans. I don't know, you guys, if you're a U of A fan, you just sit there and hope that something bad happens to ASU so you can immediately jump on it. And the answer, of course, is yes. Because last night, as soon as this came out, and we put something up on the website about it, all these nitwit U of A fans start pulling themselves up out of the basement to say, we're going to pound on ASU. I don't know. And some of the same stuff happens with ASU and U of A. When players get arrested, rather than saying, you know what, it's an 18-year-old who did something really stupid. In this case, I mean, this is on Monday night, earlier this week, prize defensive tackle George Lee was arrested on suspicion of first-degree burglary involving a weapon, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, unlawful imprisonment. So Todd Graham suspends him, which is fine. According to the ASU police, he walked into a teammate's Tempe apartment and pointed a BB gun wrapped in a towel. What is he, Vito Corleone? I mean, at a freshman teammate and said, I heard this is where all the money is at. Lee told police he made it clear he was holding only a BB gun. I mean, come on. Let's be smarter than this, all right? Pedro Gomez on the other side. We'll switch over to baseball. Did the Diamondbacks do a salary dump with Bronson Arroyo? The answer on that is yes, but why? We'll get into that with Pedro and also the Cole Hamels trade talk, too. That's straight ahead. I'm Brad Sussmat, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at sports360az. It's time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sussmat.
Pedro Gomez joins us every week, ESPN Baseball Insider. Where are you today?
Ahwatukee.
When do you work? Do you ever work? Are you on the Eric Sorensen plan here? I mean, Eric's taken off like 90 days already this year. When's your next assignment for ESPN?
I will be in Bristol all of next week doing baseball tonight.
Yeah. Do you already have an idea what you're going to be talking about?
Oh, God, no, because that's a daily show, so whatever.
No features?
Yeah, actually, I do have something on when I went to Cuba.
Okay.
There's a piece on Cuban baseball, so that will air at some point next week.
Yeah. I know what you do on your show. I mean, I've
I know. Gee, you even know about the feature, right?
Well, it's just I just want you to pump what you've got. Okay, so Bronson Arroyo gets traded late Saturday night. Most people missed it. It's Father's Day weekend. I looked at it as soon as I heard it and said, pretty significant deal from a salary dump standpoint. There's nothing more, nothing less than it. They trade away their first-round pick from last year. Do you like this deal? Do you dislike this deal?
You know what? You're working with Ken Kendrick, and I know that a year ago, I want to say it was mid-April, Ken Kendrick pulled the front office people in and said, I want to start dumping salaries right away. That's how early he knew the season was over. And the front office said, absolutely not. We're not doing that. Not just because of the message it sends the fans, but because of the message it sends the organization. And that's probably one of the biggest reasons that Kevin Towers is no longer here. But it reeks of a team that might be in some financial trouble right now, at least in the short term, because you figure Trumbo, they got rid of him for Wellington Castillo. So that's a savings of about $3
million. Mm-hmm.
And now you get rid of Bronson Arroyo as well as Tuki Toussaint, who knows what he could turn into. And boom, there's another $10 million. So right there, they've slashed $13 million off the payroll in the last 3 weeks or so. And usually clubs that are doing that is because they're, you know, trying to either break even or not lose as much money during the season. So, you know, just looking at it objectively, as somebody who's followed baseball a long time, I would say that it absolutely is all about money.
Well, and I would look at it and say, Bronson Arroyo at earliest, I had Derek Hall on last week. I asked him, where is Arroyo at? He said, maybe at the end of July, but probably towards the middle of August. I think they're done by then. And we don't know even if then he's going to be able to come back. So dumping him and saying, look, you're going to take him off of our hands and we're going to add Toussaint. The thing is, it concerns me. It's Atlanta. Atlanta makes lots of good deals. Atlanta knows ways to make trades happen and for their benefit, right?
Well, when you look at the last 20 years, the one constant with the Braves is John Schuerholz. I know he's not the acting general manager anymore. He's the team president now. But there was always a saying in baseball that if the Braves called you, you didn't even answer the phone because you knew you were going to somehow get fleeced in a deal. The Braves, it's not that Gosselin is going to end up being anything major, because the Braves really have a history of not letting anybody go in their organization that turns out to be any good. There's exceptions here and there, but for the most part, they are very good. They're considered the best at scouting themselves better than anybody else.
Yeah, but they did take Trevor Cahill though, Pedro. So,
well, yeah,
you know,
they did.
They screw up too.
And,
they screw up too.
But what did they give up? Is what I'm saying.
I get you.
And you know, that was more of a hey, look, if he can just go five innings every 5 days, and just, you know, give up four or five runs, we might be able to win a game that he starts. And of course, Cahill's been released by the Braves. So. It didn't take long for them to see that.
Right.
But I would say that, you know, long-term, this deal could end up killing the D-backs. Because if Tuki Toussaint turns into anything, they gave him away.
Mm-hmm.
They gave him away just to save $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that a lot of clubs would not do. They would say, no, we're not giving away an arm like that, especially an arm. An arm that is so young and just, you know, there's a reason that he was a first-round draft pick. There's a reason that the D-backs took him at, I think it was 16th overall last year.
Yeah, but did Towers misread him? I don't know that. I think this is one. This is one of those things, Pedro, that 2 years from now.
But we're not going to know. Yeah, we're not.
We're not going to know on this deal. But
yeah,
on the surface, I don't hate it as much as everybody else because I don't know. Arroyo's a nice guy who plays guitar. Doesn't mean a thing to me. What means everything to me is pitching that is going to be here for a long period of time. That's going to be very, very productive. Just because he had good runs in Cincinnati and in Boston doesn't mean jack to me.
I think you erase Arroyo from the equation, though, when you think about this deal. The entire deal is Tuki Toussaint.
Yeah, I get you.
The deal has nothing to do with Arroyo. Zero. It's not about what Arroyo was going to give the D-backs or what he didn't give the D-backs or what he possibly could give the D-backs. That's not the deal. The deal is what does Tuki Toussaint turn into? And if Tuki Toussaint turns into, you know, he's 19. There's plenty of time for him to develop. And, you know, either the D-backs just didn't have the patience. And, you know, I read Tony La Russa's comments about that this gives them flexibility. Yeah, of course it gives them flexibility because it shaved $10 million off the books. But that doesn't mean they're going to use that flexibility and use that money to do anything. So that's where, because don't forget, even if they do something in the off season and say, well, this is because of Arroyo, well, that's misleading because Arroyo had a 2-year deal. So his deal was coming off the books at the end of this year anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about what Tuki Toussaint turns into. And yes, 2 or 3 years from now, this deal could absolutely be one of those where everybody's going, what the hell were the D-backs thinking?
No, you're right. You're right. I get you on that. Pedro Gomez with us for a couple of minutes. They send Addison Reed down to the farm. Will we ever see Addison Reed come back to the Arizona Diamondbacks?
The key there was to the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll see him at the major league level again. I would find it very difficult for him to return to the Arizona Diamondbacks. And it has a lot to do with just the confidence level that his teammates have in him. And, you know, to a man, they'll all say publicly, oh, my God, he's our guy, absolutely. But privately, these are the type of guys when they come in that when they consistently give it up, that's where the players, when they see that bullpen gate open up and he is the one running out, there's just this feeling inside of each of them saying, oh, God. And I've had players tell me this over the years. When a guy just does not have success, when you see that gate open up and he's the guy running out, it's deflating to the rest of the team. And it's unfortunate because Addison Reed was, at one time, an outstanding closer with the Chicago White Sox and early on with the D-backs. But something has happened, and I have a feeling a lot of it is mental because the velocity is still there. So it really is probably inside those 6 inches from ear to ear. And I know that from a standpoint of the morale of the club, it's deflating when a guy like that comes in and just gives it up time after time after time. So I would be very surprised if he ever returns to the D-backs.
ESPN Baseball Insider Pedro Gomez with us every week. Sports 360 AZ, AZ Central Sports, Brad Sussmat. Okay, one last question on them, then we'll go some national stuff. They're two games under 500. Are they buyers? Are they sellers? This trade this last week would indicate that they are sellers. Do you think that they're going to be buyers or sellers?
I'd be shocked if they're buyers. I think they will try to be sellers. I know that I had somebody in the front office tell me, this was on February 20th or whatever it was, early in spring. You know, we inherited this roster, this 40-man roster, this entire minor league system. This is not our roster. So I think you're going to see a club in the front office that's already in the midst of trying to remake the roster into what they want it to be. So I would think that they're going to be sellers, but I think they're going to have some trouble selling some pieces. But, you know, you may see just nickels on a dollar in terms of what they try to get rid of, but that may be the best that they can do right now. And if they can shed some salary for the rest of this year and for next year, well, then I would say they come out winning on that front, but don't expect them to get anything significant in return. But I think they will absolutely try to sell some pieces that they don't want.
Okay, where are you at on Cole Hamels? We're hearing Texas, he's going to get moved, right?
I believe so. Texas, my stealth candidate is the Kansas City Royals.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, because they're in a position where they have a very good minor league system. They truly believe that they can win it all this year, but they don't have a game one starter for the playoffs. And that's a key. And you've got to have a horse at your number one spot if you're going to truly win it all. And that's why I think the Royals are the stealth candidate that maybe no one's talking about. I would not be shocked if the Royals are the one at the end that put a package together that's more enticing to the Phillies and try to get him. Now, he has a no trade, so he can obviously veto. But I would think that being back in the World Series, or at least that possibility, is something that would invigorate Cole Hamels. And if you go to Dodger Stadium for game one of a World Series or Busch Stadium, you've got to have somebody there that can match up and can take the crowd out of the game. And that's what a Cole Hamels can do. And that's not what a Jason Vargas can do right now, or Mark Guthrie, or anybody like that. So you've got to have that big power guy at the number one spot if you're going to have a chance to win a World Series. The Giants have shown that with Madison Bumgarner, Adam Wainwright with the Cardinals a few years ago. I mean, you name it. Mm-hmm. You know, the clubs that win have that guy. And right now the Royals have every single other piece except that guy.
Where are you at with Houston this year? I'll let you go off that. I mean,
they are. You know what? It's a testament to sticking to a plan. They said, you know what? We're going to take our lumps. We're going to lose 100 games 3 years in a row. We're going to be the laughingstock of baseball, but we're going to stockpile this system and we're going to get ready to do something in the near future. And it absolutely takes patience, because you can try to trade some of those minor league pieces and put Band-Aids and try to get to 500. But really, what are you doing? You're not doing much. But now we're seeing guys like Correa, Springer, McCullers, all, you know, former first-round picks, and you're seeing the benefits of that. You're also seeing a club that's in a not a strong division. It's not like it's going to take 95 wins to win that division. You've got a lot of clubs that are underperforming or that are just not that good in that division, and the Astros, with each passing day, gain more and more confidence. So I would not be shocked at all if they, you know, if we're here at the end of September and they're still in first place.
If you had told me A.J. Hinch when he was here with the Diamondbacks would be doing what he's doing in Houston, I would have just absolutely bought you drinks all over the place. And...
But you know what? I talked to A.J. 2 weeks ago. He is a completely different person.
Really?
He learned,
good.
Yes,
good.
He learned so much from his time here. He told, one of the things he told me is when I got to, you know, the job in Arizona, I felt like I had to show everyone that I was in charge, that I was the man. And here in Houston, and the other thing is that really hurt him is, don't forget, he took over that job in midseason.
Yeah.
So he parachutes
That's
in
true.
In the middle of July or whatever it was. Here, he had the Astros from the first day of spring training. And it's a young club. And he told me that, flat out, I wasn't going to be that tyrant. I wasn't going to be the guy who tried to impose my will on everybody. I'm going to let the guys play. And so, you know, it goes to show that as a human being, we can always grow. And certainly A.J. Hinch learned a lot. He was also 34 back then. He's 40 now. So those 6 years had made a huge difference on him.
I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time and your insight as always. Thanks.
Okay, Brad.
There's Pedro Gomez. He joins us every week, sports360az.com. We're very Arizona-centric, but on a national stage as well. We partner with the Arizona Republic. About 17 months ago, they called me and said, we want your show every day. We see where you're going with this digital thing, and it's not a thing anymore. Amin Al-Hassan is going to join us in about 25 minutes. He's been on the set at SportsCenter all morning long, breaking down the NBA draft for tomorrow night. ESPN front office insider, formerly with the Suns. Any truth to this Bledsoe to the Knicks? What does the top three look like? Dwayne Wade opting out in Miami, DeMarcus Cousins, LaMarcus Aldridge. We're going to get into all that in about 20 minutes. On the other side, Diddy. We have to do the Diddy update because that story is just too good. You can't script this stuff. And then five ugly NBA suits with Justin Winslow. Tomorrow night, you're going to see this kid all done up. We'll get into that too. I'm Brad Sussmat. Mark Cuban said some really interesting things. Mark Cuban, whether you love him or hate him, and there's no middle ground, he's a lightning rod. And I actually agree with him on his stance that he's taken in regards to club basketball. And I'll get into that here in a little bit. Down to 11-year-olds. He wants the NBA to start working with 11-year-olds. So I'll get into that here in a little bit. Brad Sussmat, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Tomorrow night is draft night. And when it is draft night, you have a part of the show tomorrow night will be the kids coming up on stage. I mean, everybody wants to see who the Timberwolves are going to take and what's it look like with the Lakers and Philadelphia and all of that. And I've already started to hear it. I've already started to see the buzz on social media, on Twitter, about who's designing what. I was even listening to a serious interview today. And they were asking the players, they sat down, who are you wearing tomorrow night? I mean, it sounds like Joan Rivers, for crying out loud. Who are you going to be wearing tomorrow night? Eric, have you noticed through the years this trend of guys trying to really smooth their game out?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So Justice Winslow, who was a terrific player, he's wearing an outfit after he met with GQ. He actually went to GQ to meet with them. That's really not my style, Winslow said, of wearing an eye-popping suit. Fashion, I'm not that way. I'm more of a simple, subtler guy. I'm going to just do me and try to look my best, but I want to look my best. So a celebrity client list from Amy Komarski, who is dressed Robert Redford, Steve Carell, Terrence Howard, Seth Meyers, Jeff Bridges, Seth Rogen, A-Rod and Carlos Beltran, is now working with a simple Justice Winslow tomorrow night. Just that on its own merit, I would like to see the Suns take him. I mean, we'd have a fashion dude here in town. This has been the most boring, bland, vanilla group of players that I've ever seen in 22-plus years here in Arizona. They get in trouble. They get mad at their coach. They can't play. They miss the playoffs for five straight years. So she is sitting down with Justice Winslow, this Amy Komarski girl. She's also a hair expert, of course. So she's working with him on his hair. She's hired a makeup expert. So tomorrow night when Justice steps up on the stage, are we going to see it handled the right way? Also, will Adam Silver handle Jahlil Okafor the right way, unlike Roger Goodell in the last draft and how he handled a certain quarterback out of Oregon with Marcus Mariota? Is somebody working with Adam Silver today on pronunciations with the number two pick, the Los Angeles Lakers select as Roger Goodell did? What did he say, Eric? Was it Mariota? I mean, he just butchered Marcus
Mariota. I'm not really sure.
Just crushed his name.
Maybe he called him Marcos instead of Marcus.
It was like, I don't know who this kid is, but Goodell screwed that up like he screwed up a lot of things. Adam Silver, is he going to handle that the right way tomorrow night? Now, we have some pictures through the years of, because this is such a big deal, there's 20 draft prospects, and all of them are being dressed and designed by certain designers tomorrow night. They want to get their brand out there. I don't know if the late Ralph Lauren's going to be around or not. I don't know these things. I'm a simple guy. I go to Nordstrom's. I'm fine with that. Justice Winslow said, my hair, I think it's the signature item. Never mind talking about crossovers, left, right, getting back on defense, pick and roll, out of bounds plays. My hair, it's my signature item. I don't think that's the case with LeBron. So who are some of these guys that we have here? Do we have... Am I just going to guess? Who is this? That's Karl Malone.
Yeah, that's an old Karl Malone photo.
Draft
old,
night.
1980-something.
That's a tent that he's wearing. Oh, my gosh. That's not good.
He needs to leave a little bit more room below the waist for stuff.
He looks like one of these British royals back in there. All right, who else do we have here? Wow. Woo. Turn the lights off on that one. That's
Jalen Rose.
Jalen Rose wearing red.
Wearing a Nuggets hat and a nice, really, really gaudy red suit.
That tie's got to go, too. Ooh, wow.
Samaki Walker. Yeah, we've been down the road with this. Of all the NBA draft duds and people wearing NBA draft duds, this has to be at or near the top.
He couldn't play either. That's the thing. It's one thing if you're going to look bad.
Yeah, that's
and
just
play.
What I said of all the NBA draft duds and all the NBA players wearing.
He couldn't play.
No, he couldn't.
Couldn't play. All right. Do we have any more? Whoa, geez. What is this?
It's pretty easy. No, it's not Bozo the Clown. It's actually Joakim Noah.
Joakim Noah with David Stern.
Mm-hmm. Bow tie look.
Of course. That
pinstripe. That's really not a suit, is it?
No.
Looks more like slacks.
That's like a tarp that I put
blazer?
Over my plants when the sun is too bright on them.
Good player, though.
Woo!
Good player.
Now that's styling right there.
And Kansas's Ben McLemore. Now, if you're going to do it right. And that's the right way to do it.
So let me find a designer, and then I'll go find my jerseys, and we'll just sew them in.
It's pretty sweet. It's different. I mean, you got to give a... I give him a 10 on creativity.
Yeah.
And the suit looks okay. The suit didn't look
okay
that bad.
I Justice Winslow tomorrow night is going to kill it. I heard an interview with Okafor, too, that he was asked about his designer.
Yeah. And it was interesting. Before the show, you and I were talking about, like, hey, well, I want to do this a little bit. I said, okay. And so we just Googled, like, worst NBA draft night suits.
Ever.
And we got 15 pages worth of pictures.
They're everywhere.
Of guys wearing just the ugliest things you could imagine.
Because guys don't want to admit to it, but they do. And then their girlfriend is sitting there with them. Like, my wife will sit there and watch the draft tomorrow night, and she'll say, oh, he's cute. Oh, I like what he's wearing. That's part of the deal now in this day and age. All right. Diddy is... there's nothing new on Diddy today other than... with what happened at UCLA in the practice, I still believe that this is a story that can have huge, huge ramifications in the Pac-12. Rick Neuheisel recruited Diddy's son. His son was not much of a player, Justin Combs. He joined the team in 2012. I'm not going to sit here and pound on a kid. That's not right. But he was not a five-star recruit. He's been a backup player. Diddy has been a semi-regular at UCLA practices. He shows up on the sidelines. He has chatted up assistant coaches. He shows up reportedly with a three-car entourage Of course he does. And he's been there watching his son really not do much. We knew that the PR side of the Combs enterprise was going to get involved in the story yesterday. It was funny. Yesterday morning, it was out of control. ESPN was going off. CBS was going off. They were all pounding away on Diddy and showing pictures and everything. And by last night, when Combs Enterprises releases a statement that says, what we can say now is that any actions taken by Mr. Combs were solely defensive in nature to protect himself and his son, end quote. After that, it was probably a few phone calls that were made to executives at ESPN, at Cap Cities, at major broadcast outlets across the country saying, if you bury our guy, you will never get access to him, and so on and so on and so on and so on. Because suddenly that story just went poof. And you don't swing a kettleball around at a coach and have witnesses there to it, and interns have to pull you off and just use your brand to get out of it. And that's what's going on here.
And Neuheisel had some great things to say about the recruitment process on his XM satellite radio show. He said, quote, I took them on their campus tour. A half hour into it, Diddy asked me who I was. He said, tell me what you do, Rick. I said, I'm the head football coach here. He said, you're giving us the tour? I said, absolutely. This is my school. This is where I went. I want to give you a feel of what it's like to be a student.
Sure.
So that pretty much just says it all. Diddy had no idea who Rick Neuheisel was.
That's awesome. Well, and Neuheisel later said it was important to get his son there on campus because it would open recruiting doors. That makes sense. It's not the first big name that's part of that. Snoop's kid is on that roster as well.
Sure. Going on a little bit more, when you're weighing the assets of what a youngster can do for your program, there's no question being Diddy's son had something to do with it for me. Justin is a great kid. His problem was his size. He's not big enough to be a dominant player. Could he be productive? Yes. The fact his father was an influential guy played into my decision to go ahead and offer him.
Of course it did. It's good. Give him a little scholarship.
Sure, and it's good marketing for the school, of course.
I mean, does he need a scholarship? I mean, come on here. Let's be serious on this one. Does he need a scholarship to UCLA?
No.
You can offer him one, but what's the point in that? So that's where it sits today, that the representatives have now gotten involved in this. I want to see the videotape. We all want to see the videotape. It's like Ray Rice videotape, okay? We want to see this. And so that's where that story is going to go. On the other side, so Mark Cuban, when I read this story this morning, really interested in his view. Some people despise him. It's fine. I'll give and take on this one. I've talked with him in the past on this show. Not on this show, but on shows I've done. And I find him to be brilliant. On this one, having 11-year-olds under the NBA umbrella. Guys, think of it from your kid's standpoint. We'll get to that next. I'm Brad Sussmat, sports360az.com, AZ Central Sports. We partner with the Arizona Republic. Amin Al-Hassan is going to join us coming up in about 10 minutes. ESPN Insider on all things around the NBA draft, which is tomorrow night. Front office insider, former Suns assistant director, who has now risen to being on the set all morning. He's going to break away and join us, which would be great. We'll talk about all the trade talks and the Suns and Bledsoe and the top three, top four, where it all sits right now from the view from Amin Al-Hassan. That's coming up here in a few minutes. Mark Cuban spoke up this morning on a story that I've talked about quite a bit through the years, and that is I've run four kids through club basketball, through the AAU scene, also through club volleyball, through club swim. I've been real active on all those fronts. Club volleyball is the easiest. Parents aren't crazy. There's great food there. It's a party. It's a tailgate. Club softball, take it for what it's worth, guys. You're going to be there all day and all night. You're going to have an 8 a.m. game, and you're going to have a 1 p.m. game, and you're going to have a 9 p.m. game, and they're going to do it all over again tomorrow. And your daughter's going to look at you like, what are you, nuts? Are you high? Do I have to keep doing this? Club basketball is littered with sketch people. It's the only way I can put it. And I'm not talking from a race standpoint. I'm just talking about people that walk in and have an agenda there, and that's to make money off of kids. That we're going to get you noticed. We're going to make sure that you have an opportunity to get a scholarship and that you're going to use this club basketball platform to go to places you'd never been before. And I've seen more stuff, more garbage through the years, players that don't know how to use their left hand at all because they just get a coach that says, dribble with your right, the best athlete on the floor, that kid plays point guard, the biggest kid, he plays in the middle, and that's it. They don't develop. It's just it's a culture that is just not good at all, the way that it sits right now. And I know Jerry Colangelo, I've talked with him. USA Basketball wants to get in and try to fix it. Good luck with that. Mark Cuban spoke out on he doesn't want just the D League as an alternative for these one-and-done draft prospects. A lot of these kids who get drafted tomorrow night are one-and-doners. I still believe what we will see happen because I'm already hearing it here in Arizona. We have two kids that are sophomores. One's that's going to a prep school. Another that is looking at his options for college now. And both those kids, I think, are going to be given opportunities to go play in China after they're done with their senior year in high school and be paid big money. There's a freshman right here right now, Marvin Bagley, who is easily the best player that's ever come out of Arizona. He's almost 6'10". He is considered to be the number one prospect of the nation. And I think he's going to have the same opportunity to go play worldwide rather than go to a prep school or rather than go to college and then come into the NBA. Mark Cuban wants to see a system in which the NBA gets involved before these kids even get all the way through puberty. He believes the European model is the way to go. I, again, don't believe that the Euros are guys that I would draft tomorrow night. I would not touch them. But his quotes are interesting. It should be bottom-up instead of top-down. We can have the most impact by starting with 11-year-olds and working in the community than by just starting with high school graduates. If we started, this is quoting Mark Cuban, if we started with 11-year-olds and started programs that schools could opt in or parents could opt their kids into, and they were full development programs and were year-round and maybe took away the expense of middle school basketball from local schools, build facilities that are in the community, I think we could have an impact. You start off just by becoming a part of the fabric of the community, and I do agree with that. More and more, it feels as though going to an NBA game is for the elite. You don't have a sense of community. I'm out in Gilbert and Chandler. I don't see much of a presence from the Suns out there. I'm not banging on them. It's just a fact. They've got their brand that they have to take care of downtown. More from Cuban. And I think there'd be a lot less of the exploitation, which is important. You start with 11-year-olds, 11 to 14, then 14 to 16, then 16 to 18. So you can expand it as each class goes through. Then I think we've accomplished something. This sounds like he's shooting from the hip. I have a 10-year-old who's going to be 11 in October. Do I think he could play basketball at the college level? Haven't given it a thought. You know, he's fine just playing Pokemon. He's fine just watching movies and maybe going out. He wants to play Call of Duty with me. And then we'll go out and we'll shoot. And he's the biggest kid out there. So right now they throw the ball into him. He turns, he gets layups, scores lots of points. Doesn't mean he has any footwork or any skill. That's just me. I see other kids whose dads are already moving them around from place to place, club team to club team. And I think that this would continue with this Cuban plan. Maybe not. Maybe if you're out in Gilbert and there's an NBA plan out there, and there's a lot of Gilbert and Chandler Southeast Valley where I live, players that would be involved. There's also a lot that are up in the Paradise Valley area that are more affluent that will go to Pinnacle and go to Brophy and players will be developed. Maybe this is a good idea, but I still think there's going to be the exploitation. Hell, we sit here and we do our platform every day, and I'm pitched stories all the time. Hey, can you guys send a video guy out and do a piece on my 10-year-old? He's going to be great. No. You know, I'd kind of like him to lose his baby teeth first before we consider doing something with him.
Yeah, and club basketball has really just fed the fire and stoked the flames when it comes to overexposure of kids and pushing them along. And, you know, your son Cole would much rather just be a 10-year-old than even think about one day playing the NBA.
The shoe contract deal, I've seen 8-year-old club teams, right? We played in a tournament just last month, and it was a team from California that came out here, and they had all the matching jerseys, and they had all the matching shoes, and they had all the matching socks, and they had the backpacks. And I asked one of the dads, he says, yeah, we're funded by this shoe company. I'm not going to give them the time of day here. But they're already funding teams that are eight-year-old teams. This has been going on, by the way, for years and years and years. This goes back to the Sonny Vaccaro stuff. And I followed Sonny and saw his deal back in the day in Southern California. I think what Cuban is suggesting is terrific. It will come back to who's going to pay for this. The NBA, you would think, would be able to. The European model, where it's almost like an academy, where every day you're going to go to school, but really your school is basketball. It has transitioned into these prep schools, and the next step will be these companies overseas saying, come over here, we'll write you a check for your 17, 18, or 19-year-old, and you'll play over here for a year. Then you go to the NBA. It's really interesting that Cuban would come out on this the day before the draft. On the other side, more draft talk. Amin El Hassan, ESPN Front Office Insider. That's next. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports, 24 hours till the draft. We'll get the latest right on the set from ESPN, the draft talk, the draft buzz. That's on the other side.
Now, the Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Off we go into hour number two. Thanks for being with us. Sports 360 AZ. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Amin El Hassan joins us now for a couple of minutes. As promised, ESPN Front Office Insider. Just off the set, former Suns Assistant Director of Basketball Ops. Amin, it's Brad Sesmatt. How are you?
Hey, Brad. How's it going?
Pretty good. Pretty good. As we're sitting here 24 hours and change away from the draft tomorrow night, top three, what's it look like right now?
Are you asking me who should be top three or who will be top three?
Who will be top three, Amin?
I think it's going to go, I really do think it's going to be Karl Towns, Jahlil Okafor, and then Kristaps Porzingis third to Philadelphia.
So no D'Angelo Russell top three.
As crazy as that might sound, I really think the Lakers and the Sixers have kind of made up their mind that they want to go in the path that they want to. The Lakers, I think, they're just a very traditional thinking franchise. So the idea of a talented big man like Jahlil Okafor appeals to them. And Philadelphia, I just don't think. Their path to being good doesn't start just yet. I think they want to delay it another year. I think Porzingis is a very rare type of prospect. You can find guards all the time, but guys like Porzingis don't come along very often. And I think, in terms of playing the numbers, Philly will probably go in that direction rather than D'Angelo Russell.
Any of the three teams listening to trade offers, are they all locked in?
Well, I think absolutely the Lakers are wheeling and dealing. That's 100%. We know that they've got strong interest in DeMarcus Cousins. I think, L.A. is just one of those towns where if there's someone who's ready-made, who's already a star, they'd rather have that than wait on the cake, so to speak, to bake and be ready in 45 minutes to an hour. I think the Sixers also, depending on what happens with those first two picks, I think they'd be willing to talk about trading down if they could still get their guy who they want. So we've heard stuff about them maybe taking Porzingis and then flipping him to Orlando for the fifth pick and more assets. So I think Philadelphia is always a threat to be dealing, but I think the Lakers are legitimately would like to deal their pick if possible.
ESPN Front Office Insider Amin El Hassan with us for a couple of minutes. Sports 360 AZ, Brad Sesmatt. Okay, so 2 weeks from now, what do you think the Lakers roster looks like? Does it include Cousins? Does it include Dwayne Wade? Can you look that far ahead for me?
Let's start with Dwayne Wade. Absolutely 0% chance he's going to be there. There's no way he's throwing away the rest of his career to go play a supporting role on a team that's not very good in the Lakers. Cousins, it's a little bit more difficult. I think the rumored deal involving a three-way with them and the Orlando Magic, I think it has merit. I think it delivers value to Sacramento. I just think the moment Sacramento acknowledges that DeMarcus Cousins is available, he's on the block, then I think they get a lot better offers. I'm not saying that offer is bad. I'm just saying there are a lot better offers and ones that don't include them sending their superstar to a team within their division.
All right, let's look here. Any truth or fact or fiction? Eric Bledsoe to the Knicks, fact or fiction?
The hard part about this time of year is that everybody who has any sort of kind of interest in seeing certain things happen can get their point of view out.
Yep.
And move things around. So you don't know if the Knicks are the ones floating that, hoping like, hey, you know, maybe this will get us better offers for this four pick. You don't know if it's Bledsoe's people floating that because they want him out of Phoenix. Or you don't even know if maybe the Suns. The Suns maybe do want to hit a reset button here and try for something different rather than paying Bledsoe $14 million a year for the next 4 years or so. So I don't think it goes down, but you never know. You know, this is the worst time of year to kind of try and ascertain who's telling the truth and who isn't, because almost everybody's lying.
What do you make out of what's going on here in Phoenix with the Suns?
I mean, here's the thing. It all started last summer when they went out and they got Isaiah Thomas. And I know, even though they'll claim up and down that it was, they had a vision of a three-point guard backcourt, I said it at the time, I said it during the year, I said it after those guys got traded, it looked like they thought Bledsoe wasn't coming back. And that's why they signed Isaiah Thomas. And when Bledsoe came back pretty much on the eve of training camp, they were left with the problem of, we've got three guys who we've all promised would be starters, and now they're all here. They tried to do the Zach Morris stay by the bell. I'm going to have a date on this side of the dance and a date on that side of the dance, and hopefully they'll never cross paths or realize that I'm going too long to go get punched in the bathroom or whatever. And so it came back to bite them, and, you know, they ended up with none of them, pretty much, other than Bledsoe. And I know they'll try and pitch that Brandon Knight's younger and has more upside than either of the two guys they gave up, but I just don't think that was the case or that was the plan. And so now and the other part of it is, I think losing Dragic lost him a leader and lost him a face of the franchise, because that was someone, even though he wasn't technically the longest tenured guy, he was the guy that I guess Suns fans have been most familiar with. He was drafted in 2008. I know he went away for a couple of years, but in terms of, you know, having fond memories, he was the guy, and everybody else is pretty much a new guy there. And it just didn't work out, I guess. It didn't work out, and without him now, they're searching again for an identity. Who are we? Who can the fans gravitate to? And more importantly, what style of basketball are we? What kind of team are we?
Do you see pieces here that are playoff pieces on this current roster?
Yes, if they had a star. You know, so a lot of those guys are very good role players. They would do very well if they had a star. They just don't have a star in Phoenix. And, you know, you look at a team like Cleveland, and I know they underwent changes after they got LeBron, but the big part of their success this year was they got a star. They got the best player in the league. And then from there, everything else kind of works out as a way of working out. And that's what the Suns are. The Suns are a team looking for a star to build around. The closest comparison I can give you would be the Houston Rockets right before they got James Harden. Got a bunch of different pieces, guys that teams would like, you know, in a supporting role here or a supporting role there. But together, collectively, they're a rather mediocre team, particularly in the Western Conference, where everybody's got this kind of talent surge going on.
Before I let you go, U of A players, so Stanley Johnson will go the highest. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson going to be a first-rounder?
I think he will be. I think people are intrigued by his defensive versatility and his length. Offensively, obviously, he's got question marks about him. But, you know, to be honest with you, I can see a scenario where he has a better career than Stanley Johnson does.
Really?
Because he's more physically gifted. You know, Stanley Johnson measured not so impressively at the combine. And I think it's more, at least it appears, to be more clear in Rondae Hollis-Jefferson's head that he's got a lot of work to do to improve. I think Stanley Johnson's a guy who kind of feels himself a little bit.
I got you. I see where you're coming from, and I can see that totally. Hey, I appreciate your time on short notice with the draft coming up. Thanks.
No problem, Brad. Take it easy.
Stay in touch. Amin Al-Hassan with us for a couple of minutes, ESPN Front Office Insider. It was really good on Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Wow, that's kind of I hadn't thought of it that way until he brought it up, that Stanley's just kind of cruising through his thing, and it's fine.
So the Suns are going to have some things to work on.
Well,
summer.
But, you know, the comparison about Houston, it's fine, and I agree with him because, look, Alex Len is no Dwight Howard. Let's not sit here and try to cut things apart, but I actually think Alex Len is pretty talented.
I do, too.
I think Alex Len has a future in front of him, and we saw some. He's a double-double guy. I'll take a double-double guy in the middle. And he's a pretty good passer, too, in my opinion. The rest of the roster, I just think, are it's just ill-cast. That's the problem. And getting a star here, when free agency starts next week, there's not one star that I look at. Last year, the Suns went after LeBron. It's fine. Great for us. It was great for us to talk about. Great. But it wasn't real. There was not a shot of him coming here. So this summer, is there somebody you look at next week? Free agency starts next week, a week from today. Is there somebody you look at that you say, that guy comes here? I think LaMarcus Aldridge is probably going to go to Dallas. Probably looking at San Antonio. Houston's this close. Houston needs to add a piece like that. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Brad Sussmat.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/Sports360AZ.